deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. Actually, we're 20 minutes into hour two here, and John White is going to join us after having to table John yesterday. And John, my apologies, but the conversation with Doc McClellan, I couldn't pull up.
Absolutely. Well, that was certainly a lot of great information there. So I certainly don't mind being a carryover guest today. As far as Todd Pletcher, I mean, what a classy individual, what a tremendous career he's had. I got to know Todd very well when he was an assistant to Dwayne Lucas, when Lucas had that powerful national stable. And one reason I really got along great with Todd and got to know him very well is that I got to know his father, Jake Pletcher, when I was working at Louisiana Downs in 1980 as a daily columnist. That was the year of the first Super Derby at Louisiana Downs, also the first turf course at Louisiana Downs when it opened up. And in fact, the nearest turf course, to show you how big a deal that was in 1980 for Louisiana Downs to have a turf course, the nearest turf course was Arlington Park, because there was no grass racing in Kentucky. There was no racing in Texas. Oklahoma didn't have a turf course. I mean, Exarban didn't have a turf course. I mean, it was a big, big deal. You know, Churchill, Keeneland didn't have a turf course at that time. The fairgrounds didn't have one. So when they opened that turf course at Louisiana Downs in 1980, that was a big deal. And then the Super Derby with a $500,000 purse, which at that time made it the richest three-year-old race in the world. Much bigger purse than the Kentucky Derby. And in fact, the general manager called me into his office before the start of the meeting. And I thought maybe he was going to give me just kind of a talk about the turf course and the meeting coming up and everything. And he said, close the door. And Randy Moss of NBC, I became friends with at that meeting. Randy was working in publicity at the time. And before I was called to the general manager's office, I had mentioned to Randy Moss, I said, wow, what a stake schedule they had here, because they had the $250,000 Golden Harvest handicap on the grass for Phillies and Mares, the $250,000 Louisiana Downs handicap on the grass. Those were big purses in 1980, because the richest race in the country was the $500,000 Jockey Club Gold Cup. That was the biggest race in the country, because this was the year before the first Arlington Million.
Wow.
And Vince Bartimo, the general manager, said, you've been around the country quite a bit and so forth, and we're thinking of doing something bold toward the end of our meet, and I'm interested in your thoughts on it. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. Because the thing that I had mentioned to Randy Moss was, while it was a great stake schedule, I said, there's really something conspicuous by its absence. And that was a big three-year-old race on the dirt. I said it was the only category that really wasn't covered. So Mr. Bartimo says, we're thinking of putting on a $500,000 race in November at a mile and a quarter scale weight, and we're going to call it the Super Derby if we get this off the ground. And I'm interested if you think we'll be laughed out of racing. And I said, well, Mr. Bartimo, it's very interesting you bring this up, because I was just discussing this with Randy Moss, that you didn't have a three-year-old race, and wow, you are thinking big here, no question about it. I said, really, as far as I can see it, there's good news and bad news. He says, well, give me the bad news. You're not going to get a horse of the stature of like a Spectacular Bid or an Affirm, you know, like the top three-year-old in the country, if that horse is going for Horse of the Year, probably. I mean, he says, no, it's $500,000. I said, Mr. Bartimo, it could be $500 million. Those horses are going to run in races like the Marlboro Cup, the Woodward, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, because they're going for Horse of the Year. They're going to try to enhance their stud credentials. And I said, the problem is that you won't be graded for the first 2 years. He says, sure we will. But I said, no, you won't. And guess what? He wasn't for the first 2 years. It wasn't until the third Super Derby that they were graded, and it was a grade two for their first grading. So he didn't believe me on that, but he found out, of course, that was the case. He says, okay, what's the good news? And I said, well, Mr. Bartimo, there's really no major race on the calendar past the Travers at this time in the country. And you really found a spot that could draw, you know, good horses from all over the country with that kind of money, no question about it. And I said, Mr. Bartimo, what is the worst thing that could happen? You try this, it doesn't work, and you don't do it next year. So I said, I think this is fantastic. I think it's exciting. And of course, Temperance Hill came in from New York after winning the Jockey Club Gold Cup, defeating John Henry. And that race got off the ground. Laz Barrera came in with First Albert. And the Bell family, Tom Bell, Ray Bell, came in with Cactus Road, who was ridden by Bill Shoemaker. So it was at that Super Derby I met Laz Barrera, met Bill Shoemaker, and met Joe Canty, the trainer of Temperance Hill. In fact, I stood next to Joe Canty in the winner's circle during the Super Derby. And Joe Canty, I swear, he must have smoked three cigarettes from the time they left the starting gate for the mile and a quarter race until they hit the finish line. Because it was a wet track that was kind of a weird track. Temperance Hill had won the Belmont Stakes in the mud that year. And I was surprised he was so concerned about Temperance Hill running on a wet track. And he said, yeah, but this is a whole different wet track. And he was just a nervous Nelly. And Temperance Hill won by something like six lengths. I want to say it was six lengths. But, I mean, he drilled them and ended up being the Eclipse Award-winning three-year-old male champion that year. So, that was really getting that turf course off the ground. But it was at that meeting, Steve, that I met and got to know J.J. Jake Pledger, who trained the top two-year-old male at that meet, and that was Circle of Steel. And of course, then when I met his son later, when I was working here for the racing forum in Southern California, the fact that I already knew Todd's father and so forth, certainly ingratiated me with Todd. And as I say, what a class act he has been.
Well, we've got a awfully thorough read on certainly the ones down here. And we actually even slipped in little New York and got a look ahead. So that was productive. And it seems like I didn't even get to, you know, some of the horses that are, you know, the group of horses that Viola and we touched on a couple, but they bought in 2021. So the ones that'll be 3-year-olds now, they bought 36 yearlings 2 years ago, 36 or 37. And then this past fall, they bought 50-something, 55, 56, 58. Some crazy number. So,
wow.
I mean, the fountainhead that'll keep coming. I mean, there's undoubtedly 3-year-olds we haven't even seen yet. And they may not necessarily be ready for the spring schedule and the spring classics, but they will jump in at the quarter pole, as Trevor might say. Speaking of which, let's, John, because I really have not had much of an opportunity yet after yesterday to get into the Santa Anita results, and let's jump in, and I'm looking at Sunday, so let me actually press back to Saturday, and I know people, every time this Lewis is going to be brought up, or the San Vicente, and you know, the heavy hand that the Baffert barn is holding, but that race was the Lewis on Saturday. That race was very interesting, and the top finishers came from, you know, from two different ownership groups. The Pegram Watson Whiteman, hard to figure, jumped up and improved. Newgate, as even money favorite, a winner, and it seems like maybe Frankie Dettori, at least for now, has got that Derby horse that he wants to latch on to. His whole raison d'etre for coming to the U.S. this winter, and the horse that I think is being sort of forgotten about in all of this, that Worcester, who I thought was bottled up for, you know, a long time, and got beat a little less than two lengths, but at some point is going to connect all the dots, and he's a horse that when it comes to 9 and 10 furlongs, that's going to be him. So an Arabian Lion is right now he's got a flat tire. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of reorganizing there, but these are three important 3-year-olds at least coming out of the Lewis.
Well, for Arabian Lion, I think what they might be thinking about is just going back to shorter races with him, since his first win was sprinting, and that was certainly one of his best races so far. And so that might be the thinking, because he, at least in the Los Alamitos Fraternity, when he laid an egg, and in this race, when he laid another egg, he did show early speed. Now, interestingly, while he supposedly ran such a bad race, he did get a 92 buyer speed figure. And off of his two best races, they were a 92 and a 93.
Yeah.
So I'm really kind of wondering if maybe this wasn't as big a leg egg as we thought he laid here. But he certainly has been disappointing in his last two races. There's no getting around that, particularly in the Los Alamitos Fraternity, is such a short-priced favorite. Newgate, I was very high on last summer at Del Mar off his sparkling debut win with his pedigree and everything, and Into Mischief out of a Majestic Warrior mare. And I thought he would do well stretching out. And then he just kind of spun his wheels for the rest of his 2-year-old campaign. And it looks like Frankie Dettori has been the recipe here in terms of changing his running style from being up on or near the pace early to riding him patiently early. He was last time out in the Sham and came on and lost by a neck. This time he was last early in the field of four and came on and won by a neck. So it looks like Frankie Dettori has really been, to me, a huge key with Newgate in terms of changing his style from early speed to coming from off the pace. I enjoyed your conversation with Brad Free, my good friend, last Friday, in terms of this Lewis situation with Baffert training all four starters. And not only that, all four entrants, and practically had the entire list of nominees for the race, 12 out of 14. And I thought you two covered it very, very well. Later that night, I would get drilled in Scrabble by Brad Free, his wife, and my wife. So I was the Arabian lion of the Scrabble table that evening. But, you know, that's Lewis. But another question mark about it is the 100 buyer, because it certainly isn't out of whack when you vis-a-vis his Sham number, which was a 95. But what's hard to figure is the figure by hard to figure who gets a 100 as well, losing by a neck. That's a 20-point leap from his previous top. So is hard to figure suddenly, you know, did he sprout wings here since his last race or whatever? So
well, put blinkers on.
Yes, yes. But boy, a 20-point leap from your career best previously, that's a biggie.
Well, so, I'll say this. I mean, he came in, you look at the work tab, and after the Bob Hope, where he got, you know, essentially really only 2 weeks and started to work again and got two bullets in. He since the Bob Hope, which was November 20th, my birthday, he had worked, so December, January, so basically 10 weeks, give or take. He had worked 4, 9, 14, 18, 23, 28 furlongs in terms of published works, with two 59 flat bullets among them, December 27th and December 22nd. So it clearly, and you know, I'm sure at some point in there, blinkers were tinkered with, but you know, obviously this is a horse that stepped forward and is stepping forward, and that start in the Capote, the win in the Capote. If you're looking at the figs from that standpoint, he had actually made a big step forward then from his two starts previously at Del Mar. And then he kind of, then in the Bob Hope, it looks like he reacted a little bit to that. So if you work off the Capote and then you get him around two turns as well, and the way he was working, this horse took a logical step forward. And I'll tell you, he absolutely did not want to let Newgate pass.
Oh, he fought hard, no doubt about it. I made him 8 the one on the morning line in a four-horse field. He went off at 12, so people weren't exactly flocking to bet him for sure off of his past form and even those workouts. And the reason I made him 8, which is high in a four-horse field, is because he really didn't have the buyers stacking up to the other three going into the race again. But, you know, at this time of the year, this is the thing. And yep. Steve Haskin and a lot of people have discussed this, and it's true. For those of us that have been covering the Triple Crown, I've been basically covering it since high school when I wrote that Secretariat would sweep the Triple Crown in March in my high school paper. Back then, horses raced a lot, and we had a real good handle on their form. Nowadays, because these horses are so lightly raced, a horse like a Cyclone Mischief can look great 1 week and then in his next race, you know, run poorly. So that it's a topsy-turvy situation so much because we're just kind of having to speculate on horses. And so it's not out of you know, not a shock for a horse to jump up and show some improvement like Hard to Figure. That's for sure. So one thing I wanted to touch on today, too, is the cross-country wager, which I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago that I was kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude. And I said I prefer these pick fives or pick sixes if there's a lot of stakes races involved. And last Saturday, there were five in that cross-country pick five. They were all stakes races.
Right.
So I felt obliged to hop in there and put in a $288 ticket. And I didn't hit it. I missed the same race you did, Quatrell, who won it 10-1. But I'll tell you what, I really feel kind of happy about playing the thing and so forth, because it paid almost $7,000. And even though I missed that one leg, you know, that race, the complexion of it changed dramatically with the scratch of Hamwood Flyer.
Yep.
And I really like Bay Storm once that scratch happened.
So did I.
And Bay Storm suddenly, to me, was going to get a much better scenario early than what was going to happen with that runoff Hamwood Flyer in the race. And I originally was going to have Quatrell on my ticket because of the fast pace. And I chopped her off the ticket. And I played four in there. I had four of the seven horses.
Oof.
And I took Quatrell off, and I don't regret it, because, I mean, it's one of those, that's how I saw it at the time, and it made sense to me at the time. But Bay Storm gets beat a half a length by Quatrell, and, you know, it's Bay Storm was 3-1, Quatrell was 10, so that certainly moved up the price. But the reason I'm not disappointed to play in it, I would have been alive to three horses in that last race, Earl's Rock, Air Force Red, and one that you've talked about, De Jure. And if De Jure wins,
oh my God,
who I made 15-1 on the morning line, and went off at 15-1 and loses by a nostril.
Yep.
You know, that's what makes these pick sixes and pick fives and cross country pick fives and so forth worth playing, when you catch someone like a De Jure and
a Quatrell and Quatrell. Or I mean, you could back it up and say that Quatrell was the De Jure of the sequence.
That's right. Well, and this is the thing, when I originally had her on my ticket, that's how close I came. Imagine what that would have paid if De Jure wins and I had Quatrell on my ticket.
Pays $35,000,
$4,000, $40,000. So, to easily. Me, it was $288 well spent. I mean, yes, I'm disappointed at how it turned out because, you know, Bay Storm gets beat and I took Quatrell off the ticket. But that De Jure, you really had to sink your teeth into that form. That's why I didn't make him lower on the morning line, because it was a big field and a competitive field, a very tough field in terms of trying to put odds on these horses, because when I originally put the line on, it was way too high in the percentage, and I had to keep raising the prices on horses, which that happens in those very competitive races like that. And De Jure, I had him started at 8, he went to 10, then to 12, and I finally had to make him 15-1 in there. And again, that's what he went off. But when you look back at his form as a three-year-old, and his buyers, 89 in the American Turf that he won, 90 in the Saratoga Derby, in which he finished third, those, and you made the point, and this is something, what I love about racing, one of the many things I love about it, is you keep learning. Charlie Whittingham once told me, right in front of the grandstand at Santa Anita, you know, I'm still learning, and I almost fainted, because I thought if there was anybody in this game that knew everything, it's Charlie Whittingham. And I thought, my God, at his age, if he's still learning, that means we're always going to be still learning. And I'm still learning. And one of the things I've learned is this, and Thoroughgraph has played a big role in this, because, and I don't get the Thoroughgraph before I make the morning line, because the Thoroughgraph comes out afterwards. But, and I wish I had that, because for a while before I had to put the odds in the racing form, and they went in the next day, I did have the Thoroughgraph, and that was fantastic, because I'm as a huge Thoroughgraph fan as there is in the world. But Thorograph has taught us that those numbers from like a three-year-old that off a layoff to a five-year-old, you really can bump those up in terms of just their maturity and so forth. I mean, you can project that they're going to run at the very least equal numbers and very possibly better numbers. And he ran a 93 in the Thunder Road. So, and that was the thing. If you figured he would run back to that three-year-old form, it was going to put him right there at a nice price in this race, in the Thunder Road, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, and that was the case I made with, and people have heard me talk about this angle, for a good long while, that it's one of my favorite things going into, I mean, it doesn't even have to be on the calendar year, but any time a horse has missed any significant time and, you know, has made, you know, those kinds of transitions. And I promised yesterday, I just pulled it up on the screen. I'll tweet it here shortly. I promised yesterday that I was going to show this, and I don't, I'm not somebody that, despite what Andy Serling likes to say whenever I try to talk about a result, I don't do this too often, but I was really proud of sniffing him out. And it made, after missing the multis, all the big multi tries Saturday, to hit that Thunder Road and hit that try, which for $2 paid $4.60. I made Earl's Rock the pick, but du jour was the right price to key, and not the least of which is that, you know, being drawn inside on that turf course is a positive, and so, you know, du jour coming off that layoff, 405 days, missing his whole four-year-old season, he's coming back as a mature horse. And that's a very different scenario than even a horse at the end of his three-year-old year. And when I put this up, I want people to look at the Temple City. I tried to highlight this yesterday I'm so bad with those editing tools. I wanted to highlight what you're going to look at is under the sire, Temple City. It's the right column. And you're going to see Earl's Rock's Thorograph figures and du jour's. And then, of course, that also gives you D'Amato's numbers, Flavian Pratt, Baffert, and Rispoli. But under Temple City, you're going to see TGI, which is the Thorograph Index for the stallion's progeny at ages 2, 3, 4, and then 5 and up. Well, as I said yesterday, the Thorograph Index, the average figure that a three-year-old son or daughter of Temple City runs is a 16. Well, five-year-olds, 11 and a half. So you could figure, you could take, you know, the career tops, the best races, and du jour's form had actually been very, very steady as a three-year-old. And he'd run a bunch of sevens, and his best was a six on Thorograph. Earl's Rock was coming off a four and a half in that allowance win at Del Mar. And so to put du jour in the picture with Earl's Rock, he needed to improve, you know, 2.5-3 points on the Thorograph scale. Well, that wasn't a hard projection to make, knowing that Temple City progeny with maturity are that much faster than they are at three. And you know, once in Jerry Brown's parlance, you know, once a horse, it's sort of like Sabermetrics and Bill James, once a horse or a player establishes a certain threshold, a certain level of performance atop, they own that. They, and the same thing with Bill James, they own that skill. You know, whether it's stolen bases or on base percentage, batting average, home runs, whatever. The same is true here. So at 15-1, you had to think that du jour had a chance to impact the race. And at 15-1 and change, I mean, he would have paid close to $33. He would have paid $32.60 had he won that photograph. And as it is, it was a tremendous bonanza with the favorite and the second choice. Air Force Red was the favorite under 2-1 and just under 4-1 for Earl's Rock. This was an anatomy for a score, and that's in as tough an environment that we're all, you know, those of us that are individual players that are fighting for our survival, essentially, to keep our head above water, you know, in a very challenging marketplace where there's very little value to be found anymore, between the knowledge that's out there, the data sets that people can employ, and then playing against, you know, the groups that siphon a lot of value out of the pools. So when you find an opportunity and are in a position to exploit it, you got to do it. And it's the only way to stay ahead and potentially, you know, get well ahead. So there's my treatise on that.
Well, on top of all the points you made for DeJure, also what he had going for him in this particular situation to me was the trainer, Bob Baffert. And I say that from the standpoint, not every trainer has the horse ready to fire this kind of performance off that kind of layoff. You know, there are a number of trainers that will prepare a horse for a comeback and, give them a risk to build on. Baffert isn't really one of those. And you could tell from the work tab again. I mean, going clear back, you know, for several weeks, 59 on the training track, for Pete's sakes, and 59 and change on the training track, 47 and change on the training track. And that was interesting that Bob is not one to work horses on the training track. And that Santa Anita, through the years, that is, you know, Phil D'Amato was an earlier knee line. In fact, Mitchell was like Votto's former boss, that to use that training track. A lot of times horses that work well on that training track will run well on the turf at Santa Anita. So that was something else that kind of jumped out at me. So while it was, like I say, kind of disappointing I didn't hit for like 35,000 or even almost 7,000, I certainly don't regret making that bet because I got a good run for my money there, and it makes me eager to play it again. Now, I say I'm eager to play it again. The very next day, I did not play the cross country, and the main reason was because Santa Anita had a mandatory payout in the Rainbow Pick 6. The only time I play the Pick 6 nowadays with these Rainbow deals is if they've got the mandatory payout, and there's such a disparity in the pool between the cross country and the mandatory payout at Santa Anita on Sunday. The cross country pool was $224,000, whereas the pool for the Pick 6 at Santa Anita was for $4 million. Plus, you can use a lot more horses on your ticket for a 20-cent base wager than a dollar base wager. So that made me focus on the Pick 6 at Santa Anita on Sunday. I played two tickets, a $144 ticket and a $96 ticket, and they both hit.
What did it pay?
It paid just under $1,000.
That's what I thought, 900 and change.
So I basically came away with not too much under $2,000.
Nice.
for a $144 ticket, a $96 ticket. And on one of the, I had singled Exalted in the last leg on one ticket, the smaller ticket. On the bigger ticket, I was alive to two horses in the last race. And the other one I used was Rip City, who scratched in. And I thought, might be live at a price again. This was kind of the de jure approach in trying to throw somebody on the ticket that might be live at a price. And Rip City was right there to the top of the lane and then ended up faltering. But that would have paid $3,700. So I was glad that I at least was live to somebody that was really going to pay a lot there. So
nice.
So I was very pleased, at least for the weekend, especially after coming so close to that cross country pick 5 on Saturday to bounce back and hit the pick 6 twice on Sunday.
Good job. Nice job. And then, of course, that also, you know, pays off the 288 or 244 you spent, whatever it was on.
Yeah, 288. That's right.
We did sort of in this conversation, we did kind of hit on the megahertz result, and interestingly, it was Phil D'Amato. You know, we talked with Phil during the week about having three horses in there, but it was Mullins and the Red Baron's Barn Rancho Temescal player, the 5-year-old Quatrell that took the megahertz. Fun to Dream was too good at 1-2 for Baffert and Jill and Connie Pagler that own Juan Hernandez aboard here in the Santa Monica. We obviously just talked about the Thunder Road. There is, before we talk about Sunday, John, I do want to mention one horse. Steve Knapp won two races on Saturday, and Bus Buzz, a Stay Thirsty gelding, a Terry Lovinger homebred, and he's got some partners involved, paid $14.40 and got a 92 buyer, this 3-year-old cowbred out of Lost Bus. That, if I'm not mistaken, and it's Lovinger, so that's got to be it. That was Gary Sherlock, right? That was a Sherlock filly.
That's right. And by the way, a 93 buyer, actually.
93.
In that
there you go.
By the way, you mentioned Fun to Dream, too. I just wanted to mention that I managed to have $1,000 one time she's ever lost in her life. My wife and I were at a park enjoying a concert, and before the concert, I was following the races in my chair in the park from Del Mar, and I had $1,000 on Fun to Dream, who finished second to Awake at Midnight and then was disqualified. And so at least I put another $1,000 on her this weekend. So I, at least now she only owes me $500. So, I mean, that how I can manage to do that. One of the real examples of that goes back to the early 1980s when Heartlight Number One was a champion for Burt Bacharach. And his trainer was Pedro Marti. And I knew that they were very high on this filly at Santa Anita. Bill Shoemaker was up, and she broke like a pretzel. I mean, it was really just a horrible break from the gate. And she got beat that day. And I would go by Marty's barn all the time, and I'd say, how's that Heartlight Number One doing? And he says, oh, She's doing great. And I said, well, the main thing you're going to want is for me not to bet on her, because I managed to stop her in her debut. And he says, oh, then please don't bet on her. She finished third in her debut as the 2-1 favorite. Well, she came back next time out in the summer, in June at Hollywood Park, and won by 7. And I didn't bet her there. So I went by Marty's barn, Pedro Marti, the next day, and I said, well, see, I didn't bet on her, and she won. So if I were you, you might think about bribing me, because I said, if I bet on her, you're going to be sorry. And so that became a running joke with us. Well, but in her third career start, she won the Grade 1 Hollywood Oaks by 12.
Wow.
And I went again by the barn the next day, and he says, did you bet her? I said, no. And he says, oh, good. And, I mean, this went on. She won 5 in a row, including the Del Mar Oaks on the grass, as well as the Hollywood Oaks on the dirt. She shipped to New York and won the Ruffian Handicap, and then got beat in the Beldame by a head. And she was the champion 3-year-old filly of 1983. So that was kind of a running joke. And I'm sitting there managing to bet on Heartlight Number One and lose. And I felt the same way about this Fun to Dream. But I've managed to bet her the one time she's lost in her entire life so far. So sometimes this game can be so frustrating that way. Buzz Buzz was just lights out. I mean, that was a tremendous performance. She just, this early zip, 43 and change to the half, and she was just getting warmed up. I mean, drew off, won with authority, and like you say, gets this very nice glittering 93 buyer here for Steve Knapp. I mean, they got to be thrilled with this Stay Thirsty. And what a sire he has become for the state of California. I mean, the Stay Thirsties, he's siring so many good horses. Terry Lovinger he's like a proud father. And he should be, because Stay Thirsty has really made his mark here in this state. And dirt horses, turf horses, young horses, older horses. I mean, he's just been terrific as a sire.
It's interesting, too, because it does seem that when they hit out there, and I don't know if it has to do with the base of mares or it's actually something Sid might riff on, whether you think about Grayson and any of any of the unusual heat, obviously. But what?
By the way, unusual heat. Mike Mitchell and I once were talking about him, and he got outshook for him. Barry Abrams outshook Mike Mitchell. They claimed him off of Richard Mandela, and Barry Abrams had gone over to the CTBA library across the street from San Anita and done a lot of pedigree research to see maybe this would be a very good stud. And Mike Mitchell was laughing with me one day between races at Santa Anita, and he says, "They're so lucky that I didn't win that shake, because the first thing I was going to do was geld unusual heat." And Mike Mitchell, that I'm sure he would have, because he had a track record of doing that with a lot of those types of horses, horses that came from Europe, and he would claim them and geld them, and they would end up being very good turf marathon horses. So imagine how that would have changed the landscape in the state of California in terms of racing and breeding if unusual heat, if the shake had gone the other way and he'd never gone to stud because Mike Mitchell would have gelded him.
Well, and in this particular case, we're happy you went Barry's way. It ends up being part of Barry's incredible legacy. But, of course, the best part of his legacy is his generosity and is wonderful, the way he treated everyone. Just an absolute gem that's missed daily. John, there were other things to include in here. We just talked about Buzz Bus. I also will mention that Genius Jimmy, the Jimmy Creed from Michael W. McCarthy, and the big group, Pappas and Bill Strauss involved and others. Genius Jimmy was a sneaky, our man, Jay Frederick, Jay sniffed him out off of the difficult trip last time, and Juan Hernandez put him on the lead and improved his position, as Jay Pribman would say. He's a horse worth watching. And then on Sunday, let's slip this in before we wrap, in the San Marcos, Prince Obama. There's that man again, Phil D'Amato, Michael House. And in fact, Michael House won a couple of races over the weekend, right? There was another Michael House winner, from Saturday, I think. There were a bunch of double, yeah, House won, Tom's Beauty, won that allowance for Michael House and Mullins, on Saturday. But Prince Obama by a neck over Master of Foxhounds. You got 1260 on Prince Obama. And then there was also Hopkins, who gets an elusive stake win sprinting, and that came in the Palos Verdes for Juan Hernandez. And he was good in there, went off as the slight second choice behind Straight No Chaser, and basically they sparred the two of them. And Hopkins, who was one of the hopefuls going back a couple of years for SF and Starlight, the Avengers group, kind of had a delay to the start of his career, and it feels like the train's finally leaving the station for him with that win in the Palos Verdes, and they found something that I think they'll probably go forward with.
Bud, you mentioned Michael McCarthy, who I'm so proud of him, because when he went out, left Todd Pletcher, went on his own as a trainer. I thought he would do very well, and he certainly has, to say the least. And he's really built up a very good stable. And he had an impressive baby winner in the first race on the Sunday card.
Yes.
In the three-year-old Into Mischief filly, clearly unhinged. They pounded down Conquistar from the Baffert barn, you know, to heavy favoritism in that race, and I made her 6-5. And as often the case with these Baffert horses, I can't seem to make them low enough. But one reason I didn't go lower on Conquistador is because I made clearly unhinged 5-2. I thought she was very live in that spot off the videos I had seen, at XBTV, and she went off. She drifted up from that to 4-1 early in the wagering. She was up there at like 7-1, and I came very close to betting her. But I thought, you know, she'll probably come down, and I thought she might even come down further than that 4. 4 wouldn't have been bad, though. But clearly in hand with that pedigree, by any mischief out of the smart stream, and McCarthy and Hall of Famer John Velasquez, Johnny V, teamed up for that win. And, boy, she looked good doing it, too. I think that's a filly with a bright future.
Well, a good weekend of racing at Santa Anita, and kind of a quiet weekend coming up next with the Sweet Life on Saturday and the Lady of Shamrock on Sunday. But then things start to ratchet up again. And looking forward, John, to getting out later in the month, at the end of the month, for Big Cap.
That'll be here before we know it, that's for sure.
John White, everybody. Post time, John. And, John, I appreciate it. Thanks for the wall-to-wall coverage of the weekend. I appreciate it.
Very good, Dave. Good to talk to you. Talk to you next week.
You got it. And, oh, John, the one thing I didn't slip in that I threatened to, you're gonna go to the to LaSalle for the Jockey Holy Angels game?
Well, no, I haven't been back since the one time I coached him and we won. So I, you know, a one-for-one retired as the coach and turned over the reins to Kurt Hoover for his long run. And, but it was a lot of fun when I coached it, because what happened in our particular year, this is going way, way back. Kent wasn't on the team, unfortunately for me. He was not riding in Southern California at the time. But I ended up playing with Kurt Boomer, Kent DeSormo, in a kind of a rec league here in Southern California. So that was a lot of fun with Kent. But in that year I coached, we were down pretty good at halftime. And we had a jockey corral, and he was our kind of our best player, but he was a very good defensive guy against those grade school kids. And I put on a full court press, and this corral must have stolen the ball like 100 times in the second half, and the jockeys rallied to win. And so it was really, that was quite thrilling in a way for us to make that adjustment, that halftime adjustment, put on a full court press and end up winning the game.
Well, that's got to be Jimmy Corral, who does the like the tack
yes.
Stuff.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
He does gorgeous. Does these laminated racks for tack and really cool stuff. He sells it at Clocker's Corner. And
for those playing the Long Acres drinking game, he won the Long Acres Mile during his race.
Did he really? I did not know that. That's I'm delighted his name comes up like this. That's great. John White, he's a font. He's a font of information. Let's take the second hour break. We're just past the top of the hour. Andy Serling is going to join us, and they're starting to assemble, getting ready to assemble here in the Horseman's Lounge, our last morning here until the end of March, when we'll come back for Florida Derby. But the second session of the week for the Groom Elite program. I put up the picture yesterday of all the grooms that are taking instruction. They start the day out with lunch and kind of a chat around. And then I don't know if you saw the picture this morning I put up, but they had the horse legs for wrapping, as Doc had explained. It was pretty cool. This would be worth. We're going to see about the. Getting some of the lessons up on, up on like YouTube, so that people can see what goes into it. I thought that was an important conversation yesterday. Let's take a timeout. Back after this, last hour from Gulfstream. This really fun 2 weeks we've had here. Tampa tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. Back after this, Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making...